Kabinka Britsen is going to do in the 1500. He has time to look behind him. 20 years of age, and he is on top of the world.
But coming down for a maiden national crown, Cornwall is a champion.
Kabinka's has run his race, or has he? Has he got anything left? Kabinka's trying to get there. Kipchoge, the junior's there.
It's going to be Cheruiyot and Hoare. Who's going to get it? It's going to be Australia! The gold!
Steve Monageddi is still a household name throughout most of Australia. Along with Dee Costella, he is without a doubt one of Australia's most recognisable runners. With World Champs bronze and Commonwealth Games gold medals donning his trophy cabinet, and with a 2:08.16 PB, Mona was the elite of the elite in the 90s and would still be one of Australia's best today. At 61 years of age, Mona still runs, and pretty fast too. Last year, for example, he pumped out a 33-minute road 10K at 60 years of age. We caught up with Mona to discuss not just the old days, but what is happening now, how he still manages to run so fast as a Masters athlete, and also his thoughts on a range of things, from Jen Gregson, Pat Tiernan, and Brett Robinson, to Super Shoes and Kelvin Kiptum. We hope you enjoy. Just quickly before we jump into this episode is powered by a brand close to my heart, Tarkine. Tarkine is a rapidly growing Australian company that makes high-tech running apparel and shoes in an ethical and sustainable way. From high-quality running hats and shirts to soft and comfortable merino wool socks, our recently released Trail Devil shoe got voted by Believe in the Run website as one of the best surprises of 2023 and has found its way onto the feet of some of Australia's best runners. Tarkine is run by Australians in Australia and all product is shipped from Perth, Western Australia. Check them out at tarkine.com and use code RUNNERSTRIBE for 10% off your first order. Before we jump into it, a quick word from the sponsors of this week's episode. ASICS has just released the new Gel Nimbus 26. With cloud-like cushioning and soft grip, it delivers unmatched comfort. The new Gel Nimbus 26 shoe is ASICS' most comfortable shoe yet. Now available by ASICS.com and specialty running stores. I'm here with Steve Monageddi. Mona, it's a privilege to have you on the show.
Sam, great to be back, mate. Seems like it's been too long.
It has been. And for those who haven't read our book, The Marathon Stars, that we did with Mona was in it many years ago. I remember we chatted then and at Leonora a few times, I think, and at Forest Creek, I ran into you once with Raph Bohr and hang out there and had a chat. It's been a few years, I guess. We're a bit older than last time we met.
Yeah, great memories. And, I always say that running friends are friends for life. And whilst we don't catch up as regularly as we'd like, it feels like just yesterday. And you pick up where you left off, don't you? It's kind of like a marathon without a finish. We just keep going.
Exactly, mate. Yeah, Mona, I want to just, it's a few days after Pat Tiernan's run. He jumped a 2:07, second fastest in history, Australian, obviously. I want to get your thoughts on it. You must be stoked for him. I just wanted to touch base with you on that.
Yeah, and sure. And I've kind of followed Pat. I've sort of had little wagers and bets along the way with people. I actually thought, so I'm not pumping up my own tires. You can check that with a few of my friends that I said Pat would break Deke's record, which he did. Unfortunately, though, Robbo had already broken it 12 months earlier. So, which is great for distance running. I think we're all kind of worrying about, we just needed to get a few guys under 2:10 and the women were going really well. So it's nice to have Pat and such a marathon runner. I mean, I think, that rhythm is just a beautiful looking runner. So that's why I was kind of always thinking that once he did get out to the marathon, he'd be exceptional at it. And he's showing that. And I still think he's got a bit of upside as well, which is obviously even better for him and a massive. I mean, you don't just drop 3 minutes off your PB every day of the week, so to be able to do that's shows that there's a bit of improvement there. And he's had a pretty tough couple of years. I think everyone would acknowledge that. So, and he's a terrific bloke, and it's nice to see getting a bit of reward for the hard work that he's put in. And that's what you want in marathon running and distance running. It's never, we can talk till the cows come home about talent, unrecognized talent, people who are so talented and all blah, blah, blah. But, being able to back that talent up with a strong work ethic, with the patience, came out and he ran Zatopek and ran well. He looked like a marathon runner there, didn't he? To be honest, if you looked at that, you'd probably go, shit, that bloke can probably run 2.7 in 2 months' time, and he has. So, that hard work that he's put in has obviously reaped rewards. And to do it at Houston, which probably a little bit surprising, not historically, a super fast course. So I was a little bit surprised with him doing it there. I thought he might need, everyone seems to be running faster Valencia as we're gathering, but Valencia, Berlin, Chicago, somewhere like that. So
Fukuoka maybe, yeah.
Yeah, and that where you see that's probably where he's got a bit of upside as well. Yeah. And finishing fourth, that's the other thing. And I like to, the girls ran great recently, but in Valencia, but Robbo ran really well in Fukuoka. And what we forget is Robbo at 37K was 10 seconds behind the winner. Now that's what I like. Start forgetting about times. People running 2 hours, 2:01. Well, if we've got guys running 2:06, 2:07, you go, they're 2K behind the win. But no, be competitive in the marathon. And Pat was fourth in the marathon. That's what I love to see. So, that's where I go. It's a race. We can time trial all we like, Sam. But at the end of the day, no one worries about the Olympic time. If you win, you're Olympic gold medalist. They don't say, we only get half a gold medal because you ran too slow.
It's so cool, heading into an Olympic year. It's our women's marathon running is damn good. Now we have a few men, significantly under sub 2:10. Where do you think this all started, Mono? When we interviewed you for the book, over 10 years ago now, it'd been a long time since an Aussie man had broken 2:10. And we were talking about, you were blaming, I think, tongue-in-cheek, blaming Craig Mottram. Everyone wanted to be a 1,500 and 5K runner because they wanted to be like Mottram. But what changed, mate? It started with the women, I feel. Obviously Benita always ran quick, but then there's been a lot of women recently, and then the men kind of followed the women. What do you think happened?
I think a couple of things. I think this new, and I'm old school, I don't do it, never did, and I couldn't on a Sunday morning go for a 35K run and, do 20 of it at jogging pace and then, the last 15 at marathon pace. That would just kill me. I can't even the thought of it. I'm getting nervous just thinking about it. So that type of training is obviously something that we needed to incorporate into Australian distance running, and obviously that's reflected now in. And the women were always better at. I reckon they absorbed those runs better. So if you say, and I've been away on lots of teams where women will go out for a run and they drop us because women have a capacity to run closer to their max and they're probably more suited to running a marathon. So I think our Aussie women embrace that sort of tempo, long tempo running before the men did. And, that's probably I could be responsible partly for that. But now they've absorbed that. So that was the first thing. And the second thing, absolutely no doubt, is the super shoes. Now, not the super shoes themselves, but the intent that you can suddenly run fast. So it's not actually the shoe, it's the mental positivity you get out of putting them on your feet. You suddenly go, I know I'm not going to get tired at the back end of a marathon now. I can just go harder early and put it on the line, and I know I'm not going to blow up. I can keep going and I can run 2:07. So whilst there's the physical benefit of the super shoes, I think people have underestimated how great that is for your confidence, and that's being reflected now in those times. So they're not just, sneaking under 2:10. We've seen Robbo and Pat in the 2:7s for the men, and the women, under Benita's record, and they're all getting close to Benita's old record. We saw Izzy and Jen. So, I think that confidence is as much as anything from the super shoes has really had an impact as well.
Yeah. And obviously I gather from this, I'm pretty sure I already know the answer to your opinion on super shoes, but we had Deeks a few years ago come out. He was pretty critical of them. And then I think Tamsin's the other kind of high-profile Aussie athlete that's a bit little critical of them maybe. But I'm taking from this that you're a big fan.
Oh, yeah, obviously. Now I've got to declare my interest in my shoe sponsor of 37 years. So.
Of course, yeah, no secret. That's no secret, yeah.
No secret there. And, and I put them on my feet and, they're obviously, I'm still running pretty well and there's no doubt that I'm getting a benefit out of wearing them as well. So I'm benefiting from, so it's hard to be hypocritical and say, oh, yeah, I can wear them, but, don't let the guys break our old records, in them. But I just see it as progression. And the way they've now filtered down into recreational running and, that where everyone gets a benefit and we're seeing that reflected in PBs across the board and the depth, I think while I was in Valencia, there was about 5,000 people under 3 hours. So I had some phenomenal amount of people. So, that reflection of allowing other people to benefit from it as well is, I think, is really important. So it's not exclusive to the elites. I think everyone's allowed to benefit from it. And that's what I really enjoy. So, and why wouldn't you? If it's technology there, then, I'm sure, I talked to Derek Clayton and, he used to wear Dunlop Volleys or whatever they were. And, then we were in the MRIs and, shoes that I had that were certainly a progression on what he had. It's just that now with social media, we know what's in the shoes and we're seeing so much analysis of it. Probably in my day, we would have just started wearing these shoes and someone would have said, oh, gee, those shoes look different. Like, oh, yeah, they're just the new Nike racing shoe. No one would have actually said, oh, where do I get them? I said, oh, they'll be in the store soon. Just go down and buy a pair. But now because we've got so much, analysis of it, people are very aware of what's in them and the benefits and, all that sort of stuff. So I think we get carried away with technology. Sam, you've still got to run. You've still got to be able to absorb the training and you still then got to reflect that. And if it's an even playing field for everybody, the results reflect that. So I don't have a problem with that at all. And if it's benefiting distance running, I think it has crossed over where I'm having conversations with the general public. Now they know what a super shoe is and they're suddenly talking about distance running. Well, wow, isn't that a great conversation to be having? And certainly that wasn't happening 20 years ago.
Yeah, 100%. Manu, are you in touch with the current generation marks? Like a guy like Pat or say Jen, after her amazing marathon the other day, are you in touch with a lot of these current kind of, leading marathon runners still?
On social. So I sent Pat a message and sent Jen. So I'm not involved or interfering, obviously, but I'm always aware of what they're doing and like to just remind, send them a nice little message. So it's nothing about me and I don't do that publicly. I just, send them personal messages and stuff. And if I see them, I'm still at lots of events, so Gold Coast, Melbourne, Sydney Marathon, I'm seeing all of those people regularly and catching up with them, but I can't keep up in training anymore, Sam, so I can't run with them anymore, but I still certainly keep aware of what's happening.
How amazing was Jen's kind of marathon hit out? I think that kind of everyone knows how good she is, obviously, but just to run that quick, straight up is kind of maybe, it definitely shocked a few people, I think. It was very, very fast, hey, for a first run.
Yeah, well, and postpartum and with two Achilles ops. I mean, I've had Achilles ops myself. I know what impact they can have. So for her to be able to bounce back, I mean, she is one of the toughest runners I've ever met. She spent a little bit of time here in Ballarat and with Ryan. And so I'm not surprised. And I do have, I've mentioned this theory to a few people. I have a theory that 3K steeplers make very good marathon runners because they're pretty resilient. They're jumping over obstacles. So they're used to facing obstacles and they tend to they probably don't have the innate speed they're less likely to stay on the track and run fives and tens because they get out kicked all the time, or they get beaten, or they're in the flat races and they head out to the marathon, but they've got that work ethic that makes them pretty good marathon runners. So I told Nick, but I wanted to get Jen out running marathons a bit earlier, but history will show it's never too late. And the way she's going at the moment, she's got a bright future of marathon running ahead of her.
Yeah. Remember,
answering the question, I actually wasn't that surprised. I was surprised how quickly it's happened, but I'm not as surprised as to where she's gotten, where she will go, because I always backed her in as a marathon runner.
Awesome. Remember when we interviewed you years ago, one of the things you were saying about maybe why Aussie athletes hadn't kicked on is because, a lot of them weren't maybe fast enough over 1,500 and 5K, whereas now we've got guys like Brett I'm not sure Brad's PB for 15, but I think it might be like 3:39 or something, right? Like he was a pretty decent 15 runner. And obviously Jen, we know, is decently quick over a steeple. So I feel like a lot of the current, you know, marathon runners maybe have that speed element that you were, you know, touching on years ago.
Yeah, and I think the other difference is, and, you know, Deke and I are probably not good, and Lisa are probably not great examples, but we were still pretty good. You know, we'd win national cross country and be competitive over, I was second in a national 5K. So we had the ability to sort of have the range, but it was because it probably wasn't the depth in Australia. And, you know, I think ultimately what's happened is people have actually seen now that marathon running is, you know, something that they actually want to do as an event. We used to get pushed out. They'd go, well, you run a few fives, you know, too slow for that one, mate. Go out to tens. Well, you're not bad, but you're still not going to be world class. So I bump out, go out to that marathon. That's, you know, longer the better, you slow old bastard. Just get out there and you'll probably be okay. Whereas now we're actually seeing someone like Kiptum, obviously, go straight to the 23 years old, go straight to the marathon. Yeah. So that surprises me, that because I love to think that, you know, you come through with your speed base, get as quick as you can, then you back that up in the marathon and your differential is really good. So for someone to have the confidence at 23 to just go out and run 201.50, I think, in Valencia in his first marathon, I mean, that's incredible that he could back himself in to run at that pace. So I always like to have that differential. So I wanted people to be fast. And, you know, I think was it Kiptum or one of the guys ran 27.51 for the 10K between 30 and 40 in a marathon recently. Well, imagine Robbo turns up as a 30-minute 10K runner and that happens, well, he's going to get smashed. So from a confidence perspective, you need to know that you can match it with these guys when they kick it in, and girls. So I think having the speed in the back of your mind gives you the confidence that when they do surge the way they're going now, you have the capacity to run at that speed.
I saw some stuff getting shared around on socials, like after Kelvin kicked around that the world record, you know, 2:35, I think it is. And he was, it was going into his training and it was just like, blew my mind, man. I was like 300K weeks with four ridiculously hard days in it. And his coach, I mean, I read this bit about his coach saying, look, this probably isn't smart. You're probably going to be done in 4 years. And Kelvin's reply was, I don't care. You know, give me 4 years at the top and I'll disappear from the sport. You know, it's kind of, I look at the way you trained, It's a different way to go at it, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, I'm still running now and I'm sure that the reason my body is still able to just allow me to go out for a run is because I didn't overtrain. And I was actually talking, I ran with Ash Watson yesterday and we were talking about heart rate. And I said, I never needed to wear a heart rate monitor because I undertrained all my life. Whereas if you overtrain, you obviously need to wear a heart rate monitor to slow you down. Whereas I needed to quicken up. So I was never overtraining, but you get there eventually because undertraining, like I did, it meant it just took me a bit longer. And if you're patient, you know, and you're not burying your body, you're just taking a bit longer to get the benefits, but it's a safer way. Whereas if you're an overtrainer, and, you know, I've coached and helped people who are overtrainers, they absolutely need to go off heart rate because otherwise you get injured and sick and run down. So the fact that they can, that Kiptum can train, I saw that training block and I had to have a lie down because that is not humanly possible. So I'm not surprised he ran 2:35. If you can absorb that training, blimey, he can obviously run a bit quicker than what he has and will, because I have that absolute honest analogy that it's the training you do is reflected in your racing. And if he can absorb that amount of training, I'm not surprised he can run that fast. But get out there and try it. And I tell you, you'll run 2:35 if you can absorb that training, but you can't, Sam. Neither can I. No, we didn't.
Mate, I struggle with 80K weeks these days, you know.
Me too.
Along this same point, when Luke Matthews was in his prime, you know, back in 2019 or 2020, we interviewed him and I remember asking him, you know, because he was doing monofartleks, but he was doing a threshold that was before a monofartlek. He was doing like a 3 or 4K threshold, having a 2 minute break and then launching into his mono. And I remember saying, mate, like, what are you doing? Like, you know, mono is a marathon runner and mono is good enough for mono, you know, a 6K effort, or you're probably getting well over 6K. I'm not sure on a bit. You know, what do you think about that? Like along the same lines is, obviously a 6K or 6.5K threshold once a week monofartlek is enough for you, right? But a lot of these kids these days seem to be extending that.
Yeah, and I think it comes back to Sam, and I'm not, I'm quite happy with, you know, I have people apologising to me because they're, you know, they're bastardising my fartlek or change it up. I don't mind any hard sessions, great, and my fartlek's just one example. So if you use that and you, and Nick Badeau and Melbourne Track Club, they've always added, you know, the threshold on the end of it and things like that. That's fine. I just think I was doing enough volume that 20 minutes, you know, I only did that 20 minutes on a Tuesday. You know, I did the 8 400s on the Thursday, which was 15 minutes. And then on the Saturday, I thought it was a 7K hill course. Since GPS, we know it's now only 6.4. So that was taking about 22 minutes. But I was so tired from the other 180K that those short little bits of almost race simulation were fine for me, and I couldn't do any more because of the volume that I was doing. But if I had have cut back to 150, 160K weeks, then I would have been able to absorb the longer session. So they're almost doing these longer sessions as a substitute for the mileage that we used to do. And, you know, I was running 200Ks a week, but Deke was running 230, 240, and Kiptum's running 300Ks a week. So you can see their volume allows the speed to be shorter and probably a bit more intense. Whereas if you drop your volume back, you've then got to do these longer tempo runs and longer sessions. So I can see the logic in it and I don't have a problem with it, but I tend to still feel like my Chris Wardlaw, Pat Cloese, that long, slow distance way is less risky and will get every person to a certain level, Sam. Then start modifying it with these other little bits, because then you need to find those extra 1 or 2%. That's what Pat and Robbo and Sinead and, you know, and Jen have done. So compliments to them.
Nice. While we're on the topic of mono, I was on a jog with James Nipperis a month or two ago, and we were talking about monofartleks and how many he's done. And he reckoned he'd done 300 and something monos over his life. And then we were talking about you and how many you've done. And I forget what Nipper said, but it was a ridiculous number. Do you know how many roughly you've done?
Well, no, and I haven't done any monofartleks because I don't call it monofartleks. So I've done a lot of my fartleks and normal fartleks. I think that's what I call them. I saw that note from Nipper and sent a note back saying, yeah, I reckon I've done twice as many as that. But I really have no idea. But I do remember on another podcast, you probably know this story, that Julian Spence and I were running along and he said to me, oh, when you didn't do your fartlek on a Tuesday night, what did you do? And kind of thought about it, and I'm running along, and 3 minutes, 4 minutes, I'm thinking, and I said, mate, I don't know. I never did anything else. That's all I ever did on a Tuesday night. And I can look back through my diaries. So for 20 years on a Tuesday night, so 20 times 50 is what's that, 1,000. So there you go, every Tuesday night. You start adding them all up. But for me, it was just the consistency of it. So I don't know how many I've done, but what I do know is that it was a session that was perfect training to get the best out of me as a distance runner. And that's why. And the great thing is it's time-based. So, and you asked, you know, you said, Trippy and I, but we didn't have GPS. We think we got about 7K in the 20 minutes, but we're not sure. Because I know we went through, it's just under 6K around Lake Wendouree, and I went through in 17, 18 one night. So if I'm running, you know, whatever that is, that's 250K pace, so it's about 7K. But we never knew because it was just training. We didn't care. We turned up at a race on Saturday and we ran well, Sam. Does that mean that my fartlek was pretty good? I'd say so. Because you're training, it doesn't matter what you do in training. You don't submit your training times. It's what you do in the race that reflects the training that you've done. And Troop and I ran pretty well. So I think our fartlek was we can tick the box on that one.
100%. Mona, I was just moving to your current running. You're 61 now and you're still dumping some pretty impressive times. I think you did a 36-minute 10K the other day. Correct me if I stuff any of these times up. You're still placing relatively high in, like, you know, little city in all the races you're going in. What motivates you these days, mate? Like, is it a lifestyle thing and just the fact that you love running, or do you want to get out there and try and crush people still?
Yeah, well, I've always been a competitive beast, and you know, I'm a pretty good guy, but on race day, I'm as competitive as anybody, and I have my own personal challenges. And again, I like to think that I'm a very good racer, and that's one thing. I can lift for races, and I love getting in. I love the feeling of, you know, not sleeping the night before, hating the night before, getting up in the morning and thinking, oh God, is this run going to go okay? And then you get in that feeling of just challenging myself and then actually delivering and crossing the finish line is a pretty unique thing to have in life. And when you get to 61, you know, people are retiring, you know, going to bowls tournaments in their local, you know, retirement village. Well, that's to me, I like to think that you keep learning and you keep evolving as a person by setting yourself challenges. And that's what I do. And I'm trying to reflect that in my training. I mentioned to you off there, you know, I'm struggling a bit with just some health issues. So that's just made life. I'm not enjoying my running at the moment. So I've lost that a lot. I keep telling people I've lost my superpower. I mean, 36 minutes for 10K is probably okay, but I ran 33:40 on that same course 12 months ago. So I've dropped a couple of minutes, and I would expect that I would drop, you know, probably about, you know, I would have expected to run about 35 or just under, and I ran, you know, just under 36. So there's something not quite right. And for me now is the challenge to put my efforts into making sure I just get back. So get back to where I think I can be. So it's all relative. I love the personal challenges. It keeps me young. I get to run. I turn up at events. I don't just fire the gun at events, although I did at Melbourne Marathon, I saw hamstring last year, but generally I'm turning up and running in events. And I just, for my credibility, that makes me feel better, but I also feel like I deserve to be at the event. I'm giving something to the event, and I'm getting something out of the event because, you know, I want to be a part of it, and I want to have that sort of empathy with the other participants. And we're all in it together, Sam, and whether it's I'm at the front or down the back or in the middle or wherever I am, we're still out there enjoying that experience. And I find that really reassuring to be able to still do that, and I'll keep doing it for as long as my body allows me to.
Nice, mate. You were saying off air that you're struggling to get your heart rate up to where it should be, or where normal is that? Yeah,
really interesting, because I ran that race the other day. I ran Gold Coast half. That was my last good run. So I ran 73:08 or something at the Gold Coast half, which is pretty damn good. I was only 60 then, but and my heart rate, I just checked it, and this is my daughter and I were talking about heart rate, and yeah, I got it up to 175 and an average of 150 or something in the race. The other day, the race I ran where I ran just under was a little bit short. So I actually ran about 36 minutes. It was 35:30, but it was a bit short. And I looked at it, and my maximum heart rate was like 150, and I averaged about 137 or something. So I've lost this sort of ability to really push my body. So physically, there's something that's just limiting me at the moment, and I'm just a bit tired. It's like I've got chronic fatigue, but I'm not going to complain because, you know, as I say, everyone goes, you're kidding me. You'll complain about 36 minutes at 61. And I don't, there are other people in the world, you know, there was a 61-year-old guy, I think the other day, ran 33:08 for 10K. But these are not guys who have been running since they were 15. I mean, Johnny Marr and myself are probably two of the few that are still around, you know, that were running hard in the 80s and 90s. So I'm just proud that I've been able to get, you know, 45 years of running into my body, and I'm still able to keep motivated and to get this body at a level that it can still be competitive. That's what I'm really proud of. So I don't care if people beat me, but it's me being able to continue to slow down at a relative level. So I'm slowing down gracefully is what I tell everybody. And, you know, I think that's a good measure for everybody. And we're not all going to run PB, Sam. There's lots of people out there listening who are probably at a stage where they're going, well, my running's dropping away, I'm going to try some other sport. No, stick to your running and just set your own goals. You know, when you turn 60, clear the slate. You've got zero PBs when you're 60. So they're all a new PB. So work on that theory, you know. And I ran a relay, 800 relay early in last year. And you know, I never thought I'd be running 220 for an 800 at 60. So, you know, these personal goals that keep me motivated and keep me wanting to do the running training so that I get the outcomes that I think I'm still capable of.
Nice, mate. I'm kind of hoping maybe you picked up a virus and it's about to clear from your body and your heart rate's going to get back to normal or something, you know.
Apparently, I have got a low-level infection, which I think, Sam, is that medical speak for that? They're not sure what it is.
Yeah. They're probably hoping something along the same lines, right?
Competitors and other people happy. All my running mates go, yeah, that's what we've been feeling like for 40 years.
Did you see Shane Healy ran like a, just talking about impressive times as a Masters, he ran like a 8:47 3K the other day at 55?
Yes, incredible. And that's the stuff that I love. And I people go, oh, you know, does that, you know, do you want to beat that? And I can't, I've been there, done that. I know what my body's capable of. And I'm delighted that so many people are enjoying running at an older age and setting their own goals and, you know, rather than being pensioned off it. You know, people didn't used to run it sort of over 40. And yet we've got three of the best women in Australia, you know, in their 40s or approaching their 40s. So it's wonderful to see that people can run at any age.
And your training routine these days, when you're feeling well and you're not, you know, you're sick or whatever, is it much the same structure as you used to do? You're keeping your Tuesday, Thursdays, Saturdays pretty much the same, just not as quick.
Do I have to be honest now? Is this the honesty test? Yeah. So in my mind, you know, I work because I don't keep a diary, but I work on a week, Sunday to Saturday. So, and I'm running every day if my body allows me to. So still long run. So in theory, this is the theory. Sunday, long run 20K, 21, you know, like because it's a half. And then Monday, 12K with the – I only run with two or three people now. So we get out. Then Tuesday, I would normally do a session. Wednesday, just a shorter, you know, I'd like to think I'd do a midweek long run, but that doesn't happen. Thursday, normally not a session. I'd like to think I could get to the track occasionally. If I hadn't done something on Tuesday, I might do something on Thursday, but I skip that now. Just a recovery run on Friday, about 7K. And then Saturday, I would very regularly do a session Saturday morning or hopefully, you know, run a club, Ballarat, Victorian or Australian race. So that would be the plan. But at the moment, in reality, I'm running about 12K on a Sunday morning. I'm getting about 10K done most other days. And if I get a session in, it's a great week.
Injury-wise, Mono, I remember chatting to you years ago and you'd torn your calf. I guess, you know, dreaded old man calves. I think you were probably over 40 at that point. And you tore it pretty bad in a race from memory. And then I remember I was suffering from torn calf after torn calf. And I chatted to you about how to fix it. And you gave me advice about getting a seated calf machine and just lifting heavy weights, you know. And is that how your calves going, mate? Because it seems like every man over 40 that I've ever met that's trying to run just gets calf issues.
Yeah, and I've got no problems with those. And I'm pointing to the bedroom that we've converted into a gym room that has my Smith machine in there with the bar on it at about, I've got about, you're meant to do body weight. So I do four lots of eight reps at meant to be body weight, but I don't quite get to that. I think I've got about 45, 50 kgs on there at the moment. So I do that a couple of times a week and that's staved off my Achilles issues. I mean, it gets a bit tight, the left one, the soleus in the left one, but at the moment I've actually, and I don't think people know this, so this is not common knowledge, but I've got a bit of bone on my right knee. So my kneecap and knee. So having some issues with that. For that reason, I'm favouring my left-hand side. So I've got a tight hamstring on the left-hand side and a bit of glute issue. So I've got some physical issues going on as well that's I haven't had before. And these might, it's probably osteoarthritis in my knee. That is not going to get better. So I've had to, that's probably been a bit of a transition for me, Sam, to realise this isn't an injury that I can treat and get rid of. It's something that I have to manage. And you know, that's probably the position I'm in. So there are some physical limitations that are just starting to catch up with me and no surprises, but I'm managing them at the moment. And that seems to be okay. I always have the theory, if you've got one niggle, you can sort of put up with that. Once it then goes to two, and so, you know, my knee and my hammy, then I start having an intervention. So, you know, I'm off to the physio and getting massage and treatment to see if I can. And I'm actually, I have a gym program. So I'm trying to go to the gym and build up my, get my glutes activated, take a bit of load off my, that knee and my hamstring and calves. So it's all about learning and just managing the complications that your body comes up with. So it's almost, I find it's a bit of a game. It's like, you know, your body versus you. And who's winning at the moment? Well, my body's winning, but I'm giving it a good crack.
Well, mate, stuff like glute activation and core work and, you know, Smith machine, you know, reps of eight, you know, that wasn't really a thing when you were in your 20s, hey? Like, you didn't really do much of that stuff.
Not at all.
Any of it.
Much of it, I didn't do any of it. I mean, I tried to get me to do some weights and it didn't last very long and it was just made me so tired. I remember, you know, I do tell the story of I was doing two sets. Ando out at Ballarat Uni had a program set out for me. I do two sets and I went, he won a review. So I went back after a month and he said, oh, how you going? You know, we're ready to go from two to three. I said, mate, I want to drop back to one set. My best ever weight session was the first one because then I just started getting tired and getting worse and worse. So I had to take weight off. I'm the only bloke who's gone backwards on his reps. So we got rid of that. But I never, it's interesting, Sam, I never in about 20 years went for a run ever thinking about an injury. Whereas now all I do is if I get home and I haven't torn something, it's a good day. So it's amazing how the mindset changes. I never even contemplated an injury, and my training was all I was doing was just worried about how tired I was. I was managing tiredness, and you know, I tell that great story about the do I ever cross? People say, "Oh, do you ever cross train?" I said, "Yes, I used to cross train every Thursday at 2 o'clock." And they go, "Oh, right. You know, what did you do?" And I'd go, "Well, I had this activity where I'd go into my bedroom, I'd get in my pajamas. That was the activity. I'd take the sheets back, and I'd get in bed for an hour." Have a sleep. That was my only cross training. And it was very, very important. It was factored into my training because it was a chance to catch up because I was just so knackered from all week's training. And I was about to head down to the track to do some 400s and I was already stuffed. So I needed a sleep to catch up. So there's an example of just the training that I was doing. And I never, ever contemplated doing core work or stability or glute activation because I never had anything wrong with me. Why would you do it?
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess many ways, like you were obviously blessed with a body, you know, that I know that you put years and years together in a row without ever having a rest day for example, because you're obviously just genetically blessed with that sort of talent where I guess talent comes in many, what I'm trying to say, talent comes in many different shapes and forms and not just a physical talent. You also had a talent that you didn't get injured, right, for those critical years.
Yeah, and that's like your word talent. My word is kind of the ingredients. And I've got lots of it, you know, the environment here in Ballarat. My parents who were, you know, never pushy, you know, good training group here, Lake Wendouree, the forests. And there's a lot of ingredients. You know, I'm born with a really low heart rate. I mean, my heart rate last week was 32. Thinking, God, blimey, that's going to stop. I've got some issues. So, you know, all of these ingredients that I could have thrown into being a cricket player or a rocket scientist, but they wouldn't have worked very well. Whereas if you throw them into a running cake recipe, it's the perfect mix. And I came out with a perfectly baked cake. So there's a lot of ingredients and ability is one of them, but there are so many other factors that are so important. And, you know, I went to Falls Creek a couple of weeks ago just for catch up with a few people. And, you know, we used to go up there regularly. We hadn't been for a few years. There is no doubt I came back from there a better runner than I went up. Now, I don't know what happened up there, whether it's the altitude, the environment, just getting back into that sort of harder training grind up there and or whatever, but I can tell you, I absolutely know that I benefited from my time up there. So that's an example. That's another ingredient. And, you know, sometimes you don't know which one it is, but if it's working, who cares?
Yeah. Mon, I know you went to Falls a lot when you're in your 20s and stuff, but how many, did you go there to the same extent that, say, you know, guys these days like Robbo and stuff go to Falls? You know, I know they go there in November, they go there in December, they go back there in January, sometimes even, you know, maybe they sneak a little bit in after nationals, you know, before they head to Europe, maybe, you know, sometimes three or four trips a year to Falls, I guess. How often did you used to go?
No, no, I went the one. So, oh, sorry, the one period. I'd go twice. So I'd go for almost 3 weeks, sort of from over Christmas into the new year. Then I'd come home for a couple of weeks, and then I would go back for another 2 week stint. So I always like to go so that you could do each one of the runs at least once. So and that second time was just a top up, really, what I'd got the first time. And I thought 3 weeks was enough. I mean, it's hard at altitude. And I only ever did one international altitude stint. That was in Boulder in Colorado. And I hated it because there was no forest and pretty flat and boring because we were up so high. So I didn't really chase it overseas. I liked it when I did it here. But I think you have to have it in a pretty natural environment. I don't think you sort of, it's not worth putting your life on hold to go to falls or to altitude, because I don't think the benefits will then have as good an outcome, because you're compromising. Don't compromise your training to go to a place just because you think it's going to work for you. So I went at the right time. I was here anyway. You know, I ran Zatopek. I had nothing on for a few months, and then off I'd go up to Japan. You know, I broke a few world records for the half up there, won Tokyo, finished second in Tokyo Marathon a couple of times off Falls Creek altitude. And I think everyone knows the quote, you know, if someone said I had to run the best race of my life in a month's time, I'd be up at Falls Creek tomorrow. And that's true.
Well, just touching on, you know, you just mentioned some of the awesome cities you've been to, you know, back in your racing days. Like, did you get to enjoy those cities, you know, like Tokyo and Athens? And, you know, did you get to have some fun afterwards and really go and do some sightseeing? You know, are there good memories of those cities or?
Oh, yeah, they're great memories. Yeah. And what I tell you, on a few teams, we had a bit of fun. Okay, but what happens on teams stays on teams. So we're not going to, yeah, but now what I would really do, this work extremely well. And, you know, I've been fortunate enough to be able to travel as an athlete and take my family. So I would sort of go somewhere and the family might not come initially, and then I'd do the sort of hard training block and the lead up and focus. Then they would come over a couple of days before the race. I'd briefly catch up with them. I'd run the event. Then we would hire a vehicle and we'd travel around afterwards, because I wouldn't do much running. So I'd get up at 6 a.m, do a half hour run, come back. And that was all I was doing in post-marathon recovery. So then we'd travel around and spend time with the family. And that worked out unbelievably well. And I would recommend that to anyone. And, you know, lots of our athletes now have families and have lives. And that's a nice way of combining both. And I tell everyone, I'm a great travel agent. I never really sort of got out and explored a lot of the cities that we're in, but I know what they're like and what they've got to offer. So I'd be a fantastic travel agent. And you know, I was fortunate enough to travel to a lot of places the same, you know, to the same place a lot of times. So I do wish I probably had enjoyed them a bit more at the time, but you're over there to do a job. And you know, I prided myself on my capacity to run at a high level, to race at a high level, and that was because I was so focused. If you're off tripping around on bus trips, that's not focused. So I waited till after the event to allow that to happen, but made some great friends and had some great experiences. And often when I talk on things like this, it's about, you know, the people I traveled with and the fun we had. It's never about winning a race or how this race unfolded, because that's not what you remember. It's the life experiences that you share and enjoy. And, you know, like I say, I catch up with people every day who I've shared great experiences with and become lifelong friends.
The bronze medal in Athens in 97, is that still, that's still the highlight of your career looking back, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And my daughter Emma's working in London at the moment. She tripped over to Athens and she paid £10 for the privilege of, and she didn't stand on the highest spot on the dais. She stepped on the third spot in honour of me, and that was a lovely, just a touching personal moment. And you know, I didn't win that race. You know, I probably won races, you know, most of the time around the world. But that third place was my Olympic bronze medal and as close as I got to an Olympic medal. And I delivered on that day and I was 35. It was hot. Everyone said, can't run in the heat. You're old and you'd passed it and all that sort of stuff. And to finally achieve that world medal was something I'll treasure. And to do it starting at the town of Marathon and finishing in the old stadium was really special. And they're those personal memories. You know, I also tell the story of, for some reason, spectators weren't allowed into the stadium. In the old stadium, we ran, I can remember coming down that Abel Anton and Martin Fizz had finished about a minute ahead of me. And I was coming down so I could enjoy them. I ran down into this sort of the stadium and there was just no one there. And yet for me, this was my defining moment. I felt like I ran into the stadium and the marathon gods were sitting in those seats and they finally said, yep, Mono, we're letting you in. You're accepted. You've served your time. And now we're allowing you into this exclusive club. And that's the memory I take away.
It's amazing how just one medal at a World Champs or an Olympics just absolutely makes that athlete in a historical sense. You know, Mottram got his, Benita got her gold, you got your bronze. Guys like, you know, today we see, you know, Jess Hull and Stewie and Ollie Hoare and just these athletes that can totally medal on the right day, hey?
And isn't athletics, I mean, I think athletics is in, you know, I'm fortunate to be on the board at the moment and seeing the benefits of the work, but, you know, to have win the Federation of the Year from the World Athletics, that's a great honour. But the athletes, aren't they delivering? I mean, we have our strongest athletics team in my lifetime. And just to see that and to be able to go to the track, I'm not a great spectator, Sam, to be perfectly honest, but it's been a delight to actually go to the track and see not only, you know, the world athletes, but our athletes be world athletes. They're not just Australian athletes anymore. They are world athletes. And it's just fantastic to see the recognition that they're getting on the world stage for their performances and the depth across our teams at the moment is outstanding. The paras and, you know, it's going really, really well. And it's exciting times, you know, disappointing with Com Games, not here in 2026, but certainly the lead into Brisbane. There's no reason why we can't continue to improve and get better. And there's great signs and it's just exciting time for athletics and a terrific time to be a part of the sport. And for me to have stayed involved, I'm so delighted that I can still have some impact and enjoy the ride. It's a funny way, you know, people say, well, Pat Tiernan jumped ahead of you on the marathon. I'm kind of, how good's that? You know, I'm not one of those old people kind of going, they ring you up and say, we haven't heard from you for 30 years. Do you realise some bloke ran quicker than you? You know, that's not how people treat me. And it's a great way to be still so intimately involved with athletics and see it going so well. And you feel a bit, you know, you feel a bit sort of responsible. I mean, the development in distance running, surely, you know, my involvement and just running around and being a part of it, still going to events to some degree, hopefully that's rubbed off. And as you know, I can feel a part of this growth in distance running. We're stronger in distance. I used to say it was a running boom, not a running boom anymore. It's just normalized now.
100%. Obviously, I think, you know, Deeks was vital. You were vital. Benita was vital. Mottram was vital, you know, for different generations where these key athletes that really kind of motivated everyone else. Along that line, I was on a run with just a few months ago with a younger squad, and there was a kid there who's I won't say his name, he's pretty good 1500 runner at 15 or 16. He has no idea who Mottram or Benita are, right? And
no chance of knowing who me or Deke or
no idea. I was trying to explain to him who Craig Mottram is, which was just crazy in my mind. But looking back, like how important was Mottram to the generation we are seeing now with Stewie and Ollie, because even Benita did it too. She showed you can actually win a World Cross, which is just one of the best sporting achievements by an Australian full stop, right? And
I had this argument with a person who will remain nameless, because I think it's the best performance by Australian distance runner, but we had an argument, so I'm not going to say who it was or whatever, but I happened to be there fortunately on that day, standing in the finish chute with Nick Badeau as she ran past, and see, I looked across and she looked across at us and saw the smile on her face and thinking, wow, I have witnessed an Australian winning the World Cross Country, and I didn't think I'd be seeing that in my lifetime, mate. Yeah. So it's a memory and a great result. But and whilst that young 15 or 16 year old doesn't know Craig or Benita, there is no doubt that their influence is still having an impact. So it doesn't have to be personal, but it's just, I love that we, not that we respect history and tradition, but that we recognise that it has contributed to the sport being where it is at the moment. And I often say, you know, and I wouldn't, but, you know, if, you know, to Robbo and Pat and Sinead and, you know, someone like Ollie and Stewie, they are the custodians of the baton at the moment, but that baton will be passed on at some stage. And, you know, you need to know when to pass it on, but you also need to make sure you pass that baton on in the best possible way you can with the sport in better shape. I always like to think, you know, we left the sport in good shape, and the next generation continued to grow on that, and it's allowed the sport to be where it is now. So just remember, and I'll tell them, they are just the custodians. They don't own our sport at the moment. They are the custodians, and if you remember that, then you know you should respect the history, but also promote the benefits and look forward to the next future generation coming through. And that's why I'm delighted to see our performances going as well as what they are at the moment.
It's so cool. If I told you 5 years ago, Mono, that there was going to be a kid in Canberra dump a 333 at 17, what would you have said?
I would have said no chance, and I would have said, what's a world record? And you'd say, well, it's still 226 or whatever it is. I'm saying, well, that's interesting. That person's, because Cam's obviously brought that record down to the level that, that it is. And yet the world record hasn't improved, which is interesting. So at some stage, I kind of feel like eventually the world record for 1500 will go pretty shortly, because it has to, because you can't have, it's almost the reverse pyramid. We're having so many people now because, Stewie runs 330 point, and I get up in the, I get up, I haven't watched it overnight, so I get up and I check, and Stewie runs 330 and God, he's probably won. He finished the seventh in the race. I think, God, how'd that happen? So the depth is there. So there's absolutely no way that the 1500 meter record isn't going to get smashed in the next 18 months. I'm telling you, it has to happen. So I love that, the pressure from behind is coming. And if you got the depth, then it obviously pushes the levels at the higher, top level higher as well. I'm surprised. He's a great kid. I've had a bit of banter with him. He's at Perisher. I love Falls Creek. So, I've got to tell him how bad Perisher is. And what did I say? You perish it. Perisher, you only fall over at Falls. So that's my line.
Mono, it's been an awesome chat. I really enjoyed it. I think there's going to be a lot of people that really enjoy it as well. And thank you for your time and your insights. It was pretty awesome.
No worries, mate. And I just noticed you've got a thylacine on your hat, which feels a bit like me. I'm dormant or invisible, but I'm still alive.
Oh, shit. Yeah.
The chat, Sam. Good on you, mate.
If I can be doing half as good as you at 61, mate, I'm going to be pretty stuck to myself.
It's all relative. Enjoy the chat. Thanks for always getting Runner's Tribe out there. Love your work.
Cheers, Mona. Thank you.
Cheers, mate.